That's good. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the History on the Rocks podcast. This is your host, Cody, and I am so pumped because it's March. It's almost the middle of March, and I forgot that this was happening. Actually, I didn't forget. I've been waiting for this to happen, but I forgot to mention it in the last episode, and I finally went and did it. Yingling Traditional Lager is being sold in Illinois, and I am so pumped. I went out to our local Husky liquor store, and I finally found some. Out here, I don't know if you know this, but Yingling wasn't being sold anywhere but like in the East Coast time zone. Like, you could go to Indiana and you could find Yingling, but anywhere in like the central time zone, there was no Yingling. It was big in Florida when we went down there years ago, and I totally forgot about it. My buddy had like a case of it and we drank it. I was like, man, this really needs to come here. And they finally did it. And I am so jacked because I finally bought my first Illinois sold Yingling. And that's what I'm having tonight on the podcast. So Illinois people, if you didn't know, the bars had Yingling on tap in February and it is now available to the public in cans. I haven't found bottles yet. I found cans, but I want to find some bottles. But it's available to us now. As of March. So, very exciting. Anyway, we've come to the end of our JFK assassination series. I've told you this story, lots of twists, lots of turns, and a lot of unanswered questions, right? I probably have you asking more questions about that fateful day in Dallas than there were answers before. But for over 60 years, I mean, the unanswered questions led to new theories, and the government stuck with its one shooter, Lee Harvey Oswald, story. The problem with the government's approach was not considering the advancement in technology as well as the public's intuition to investigate the assassination further in the future, which right now, from 1963, we are in the future from that time, obviously. The Warren Commission wrote their report, thought they had the world accepting that story and hoping that the world would forget about it. But they're definitely wrong, because the world has never forgotten about the Kennedy assassination. In fact, the government gave us over 60 years to analyze, you know, film. Some people have conducted experiments with the shooting part of the whole assassination. People can visit the site of the assassination, see it for itself. We have Google Maps now, which I've used for this podcast. We Americans don't back down easy, especially when we have a hunch that the government, our own government, isn't telling us the whole story. So we're pushing for the truth here. So today, we're going to talk about the most popular theories out there, and then I'm going to give you my theory, and one that is rarely talked about or that comes up in an internet search at all. It might sound controversial, but I'm willing to say some hard things here that people may not want to hear, but at the same time, I'll give you my disclaimer later. I'm really just blaming people of the time. I'm not blaming anyone now, right? This is 62 years ago, and I'm just a no-name podcaster that just loves history and who is fascinated with this whole narrative. So let's get to it. And we'll get to my theory and we'll talk about that. But first, we have the single shooter theory. The Lee Harvey Oswald narrative, the one the Warren Commission report lays out for us, the one that the public's supposed to accept and move on from. And quite simply, right, it's the story the government wants you to believe and forget. So Lee Harvey Oswald concocts his plan all by himself to assassinate the president of the United States, John F. Kennedy. They say he's a deranged communist who hated Kennedy, right? Doing this for the love of communism and the Soviet Union, who obviously at that time is the biggest rival of the United States, not just nuclear technology, but also space technology, yada, yada, yada. Lee Harvey Oswald got a job at the Texas School Book Depository 1 month before he was going to kill the president. However, he didn't know the details of the motorcade route through Dallas, just to remind you. He then took his World War II era Italian Mannlicher Carcano rifle with that misaligned scope that we talked about in the earlier episode up to that sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository, waited for the president's motorcade to turn down Elm Street, and fired 3 shots in 7 seconds, one missing, one hitting the president in the back of the neck, exiting through his necktie, and then that remarkable headshot to kill the president. He then fled on foot, very calmly, I might add, where he then murdered Officer Tippit when he confronted him, and was arrested just 45 minutes later. 2 days after the assassination of JFK, Jack Ruby, you know, just a nightclub owner, someone who apparently just loved the president so much, somehow gets a firearm into the basement of the Dallas police station and knows when Oswald is being transferred, shoots him dead on the scene. Done. End of story. There, that's the abridged version of what the government wants you to believe. Now, here's a second theory that's out there, very popular among people. Kennedy's vice president, Lyndon B. Johnson, is obviously not the trigger man. I don't think LBJ could have pulled the trigger considering he was ducking in a car a couple behind Kennedy's. But people have said that LBJ had many political motives and had once hired people to kill those that were in his way to make it to the top of U.S. government. Obviously, the president being the head of U.S. government and the leader of the free world, as he's known. Now, as I do believe LBJ was tipped off about the assassination attempt in Dallas, like he knew something about it, I don't think he was the architect behind the assassination. There's not really enough evidence there to really put the blame on Johnson, even though he has this motive. And people have said, like, again, he's hired people, cronies, whatever, to kill people before. None of this is proven, but it's just one of those wild theories that is out there that people think they have evidence to support. But if you look it up, there's really not much other than hearsay and all that kind of stuff. Theory number three, the CIA. Now, this is the most likely theory out there, right? Although I think there's more to it, and we'll talk about that in a bit when we get to my theory. However, remember the names Alan Dulles, James Angleton, right? Two names that are literally around every corner in this event, right? From Africa to Latin America to New Guinea to Israel. These are two high-profile agents with high-level security clearance and a hatred for Kennedy, threatened by him, because Kennedy would have made the CIA less powerful and might have reduced their funding, right? Obviously, the head brass like these two up in the CIA would not appreciate that very much, losing their funding and power, let alone. And remember, Kennedy was also trying to make change in underdeveloped countries that these men were taking advantage of for that financial gain and for their quote-unquote clients, whoever those people are, right? We have gold deposits and gold mines that were top secret that like Alan Dulles just happened to know of and gain access to and all this kind of stuff. So the one main piece of evidence for me is James Angleton's secret meetings with former Prime Minister of Israel, Ben-Gurion. Remember, we talked about that in a previous episode. James Jesus Angleton, right? That's his full name. He's going to the Prime Minister, the former Prime Minister of Israel's private home, kind of getaway home, and they're discussing some business, but none of this business is on record. We don't know what it's about, okay? But just hold on tight to that thought as well. Now, the CIA was also responsible for a planned attempt on Cuban leader Fidel Castro's life, working with organized crime. We're going to get into that as well. I know there's just so much in my head right now, and I can't wait to get to my theory, but the CIA did try to take out Fidel Castro, and they were in cahoots with the mob, the mafia in the United States. Okay, mostly the Italian mafia, but they've worked with organized crime before to take down a world leader. So this link we'll talk about in depth in a little bit, but it's important to know there are these ties between these two organizations, American organized crime, right, gangsters, that kind of thing, and the CIA. Now, some believe the Kennedy assassination was due to the failed Bay of Pigs incident and the growing tensions between the president and the CIA. I definitely think that this theory it's definitely one of the most popular, if not the most popular, but I think there's more to it. So put the CIA on the shelf for a minute, and we'll get back to them. Some claim Fidel Castro himself planned and carried out the Kennedy assassination. Maybe not him pulling the trigger, but, you know, his men, someone within his organization in Cuba. So some believe that Castro was like this mastermind behind Kennedy's assassination. LBJ promoted this theory during the investigation, right? Of course, LBJ is going to like point the finger at someone else because like he probably knew about it. Someone tipped him off about it, whether the CIA or someone else in high government. And yeah, he's just trying to kind of throw a smokescreen on probably the real culprit of this crime. Castro outright just denies this claim in the 1970s. I think it said like 1973, he made a statement that like there would have been too much risk to pull off this kind of assassination, especially on someone as popular and famous as JFK. And it wasn't in Cuba's political interests. It wouldn't have done much for them. Now, Castro being a communist and an enemy of the United States is the main reason he's suspected, right? Like, it's kind of one of those things where it's like a wife of someone is murdered and they go right to the husband and blame him because he's like the most obvious choice, right? That's kind of what the Fidel Castro thing is. And then it ends up not being the husband. And then everyone's like, oh my God, he's innocent. And you just ruin their life forever. Anyway, I'm ranting. The fifth theory is some other group. Many fingers have been pointed at political groups and interest groups over the years that Kennedy may have threatened with his policies back in the early 1960s. And some people say that the mainstream attention over the years has made the Kennedy assassination a greater part of pop culture, with movies, documentaries, and even video games being created, causing people to speculate the actual perpetrator's crime. There are those who are critics of the conspiracy theory, saying people have looked too much into the assassination and have created a narrative to undermine the government's official story and all those kinds of things. But there's other groups out there, smaller groups, more radical political groups, things like that, who have been blamed. The list goes on, and there's just Google it. There's so many documentaries out there and stuff. I'm not going to bore you by going over every single group's name like that. Because I want to get to the good part, right? My theory. People are critics of this conspiracy theory stuff, right? I was just saying. But as we have talked about in the series, there are still facts and pieces of evidence that don't fit the single shooter Lee Harvey Oswald narrative. And that's where the American public starts to demand answers and, quite frankly, the rest of the documents to be released, and we want them unredacted, right? They're like, oh, we're going to release all these documents. And everyone's like, woohoo. And then they come out and it's all just blacked over and redacted. And we're like, no, that's not what we're talking about. Like, I can also put a piece of paper out there with a bunch of black marks on it that crosses out all the important words and stuff like that. That drives me crazy. We want to know the truth. It's 62 years later now. And let's be honest, everyone that probably was involved with the Kennedy assassination is beyond dead. All right. Like, we're not trying to smear any names here. You know, we can't blame someone's grandchildren and great grandchildren for their actions way back when, unless they have directly really benefited or something. But we're not trying to smear any names, right? We just want to know the truth. Stop lying. There's just too much evidence to where your single shooter theory doesn't match up. And Lee Harvey Oswald, he's just a patsy. So, let's get into my theory. I've been waiting for this moment this whole podcast. Now, again, it's just a theory. It's based on my independent research. It's my opinion. It's not an official story. It's not finger pointing or generalizing a whole group of people. Okay. It's just an idea where evidence has taken me from way back in the 1960s. I just want to reiterate that in no way am I trying to put blame on a whole group of people or am I promoting any hatred in this theory. Again, this is just historical research and interest of that time period of the early 1960s and this event, specifically the Kennedy assassination. So I'm not saying anything about modern time. I'm not saying anything about a general group of people, okay? We are just talking about the 1960s and what the evidence in my head points to. With that being said, my little disclaimer. My theory is a mix of what has already been stated in many of the conspiracy theories that are mainstreamed, but I'm just going to put them all together and kind of give you my sandwich of those theories in a specific scenario. My theory is the CIA working with organized crime and the mafia, both of them are responsible for Kennedy's assassination with the knowledge of those high-ranking in power, such as Vice President Lyndon B. Johnson. Now, again, I'm not saying that LBJ was at all part of the plan or had any, you know, maybe money involved in this, but I think someone tipped off LBJ and he knew he was going to be the next president of the United States through that line of succession from vice president after Kennedy was killed. He knew that day in Dallas that he was going to be the president. What I don't think people are willing to say or won't say is who exactly in the mafia was part of this plan. And maybe who had ties to the mafia as well. And this is a part where some might say I'm being controversial. But again, I am specifically talking about this day in 1963, November 22nd, 1963. My belief is that it was Jewish mobsters with the help of the CIA who financed and perpetrated Kennedy's assassination. Now, what led me to this conclusion is a couple factors. Back in the 1960s, Jewish mobsters were involved with the Italian mafia. Okay, if you do some research on the Jewish mob back at the time, or back during this time period in the early 1960s, them and the Italian mafia in the United States are pretty much one and the same. They're intermixed. Okay, they work together. So there's a lot of money here. Okay, there's a lot of organized crime money that could be used, and giving them the resources and illegal funding to orchestrate this big of a plot. Now, we talked about the American Zionist Council a couple episodes ago and how they wouldn't register as a foreign agent to Israel. They also wouldn't release any financial documents until after Kennedy's assassination, giving them plenty of time to wipe their books on anyone who may have funneled money or laundered money through the organization, right? Again, this is a lobbying group. And they had time to kind of wipe the slate of anyone or any group that was involved. Now, what led me to this conclusion of this theory is a couple factors. Okay, back in the 1960s, Jewish mobsters were highly involved in the Italian mafia in the United States, giving them these resources and illegal funding to orchestrate this big of a plot. That mob conspiracy, that's where it comes from. But again, we're going to see in a minute why I'm particularly looking at the Jewish branch of the United States mafia. A few episodes ago, we talked about the American Zionist Council. They're a lobbying group. They wouldn't register with Robert F. Kennedy's Justice Department as a foreign agent to Israel, right? So no documentation was being given to the U.S. government about their group's finances or who they were working with or anything like that. They also wouldn't release any financial documents until after Kennedy's assassination. Now, this gives them plenty of time to wipe the books on anyone who they may have funneled money to that may have been involved, right? Like the assassins themselves or any other monetary costs that were needed to pull off this assassination. They could have just wiped their books clean and the American government, the American people would have never known about it. Also, remember, we talked about this, the former Israeli Prime Minister Ben-Gurion was having private meetings with James Angleton of the CIA in which there are no documented accounts of what they were talking about in those meetings. Also, Angleton was the agent in possession of Lee Harvey Oswald's file. So Oswald stating that, quote, I'm just a patsy, actually lines up with this theory. So let's put this together a little bit. I think that somehow Israel might be part of this, the actual Israeli government. They may have influenced the Jewish mob in America to put together a plan to assassinate President Kennedy. And Kennedy was trying to befriend those Arab countries, remember? And also was trying to take down Israel's nuclear program, which would leave Israel vulnerable to its Arab enemies in the Middle East and also garner their world power. It would really cripple Israel if Kennedy would have lived and seen this through. Now, Israel knew that LBJ would support Israeli policy and leave their nuclear facilities alone. I think I even quoted it back in previous episode that LBJ saw no Dimona, talked no Dimona, right? Didn't even acknowledge the Dimona, that nuclear facility in Israel whatsoever. LBJ also would cut off aid to Arab nations and no longer befriend them, making America Israel's lone friend. Now, Alan Dulles and James Angleton already had multiple issues with Kennedy, in which his policies got in their way of an unelected power and personal financial interests overseas. So, again, here's that connection. You have a government with mobsters within the American organized crime who also have a similar interest with those in unelected, powerful American security state of the CIA who want this president gone. So what I'm thinking is that through this American Zionist Council, I think the Jewish branch of the mafia funneled money to the CIA, who would be able to have influence on the president's trip to Dallas. Things like the route his motorcade would take, planning out where they could set up an assassination attempt from multiple angles that would ensure a kill shot. They then made Lee Harvey Oswald believe that he was going to be a lone wolf and the shooter in the assassination, but I don't think he would ever take any of those shots. So maybe the plan was to just blame it all on Lee Harvey Oswald, break him out of prison, and send him on his way to live freely in Russia with his Russian wife, right? He's a communist. Russia, he would never be extradited. It would be no problem for him to live happily ever after. But I think things went wrong when he was caught. And Lee Harvey Oswald started saying things to the press like, quote, "I didn't kill the president," and, quote, "I'm just a patsy," giving the American public the clue that there were larger actors at play. Then it just so happens Jack Ruby, someone with a troubled past, knows exactly when Oswald will be transferred from the Dallas police station. He gains access to that basement, kills Oswald so he won't talk. Or else, the whole scheme could be ruined. And again, those larger actors are exposed. Now, Jack Ruby is Jack Rubenstein. He is the son of Polish and Jewish immigrants. He owned nightclubs as his main source of income. People who have researched this, scholars, professors, whatever, they say that Jack Ruby has no mob connections whatsoever. But I'm going to tell you right now, there is no way in the 1960s someone who owns a nightclub with dancing girls does not have some mobster friends. It's just, that would not be possible to me, especially with someone like Jack Ruby, who is not, has no clean slate as a young man. He is mostly in petty trouble his whole life. Nightclubs are also a business in which money can be laundered very easily for organized crime. So the question is, was Jack Ruby paid to silence Oswald for the CIA and the Jewish mob? He's the perfect fit. And why does James Angleton have his file? What is going on there? That just drives me nuts. So this is where the evidence took me. And I think people are uneasy to point at Jewish mobsters for being part of the ploy and usually just say the mafia. I get it, and that's fine. But the reason I'm being more specific is because of those political motives on behalf of Israel to remove Kennedy from power. I'm not saying the Jewish mob because I just want to point out that they're Jewish. I'm not pointing out that Jewish people are evil. That's not what I'm doing here. I believe the Jewish mobsters had Israel's interests in line, and this is a political motivation to remove a president with the help of the CIA that would really, in an extreme way, take down Israel's power in the Middle East and on the global stage. So in this theory, I do believe that the assassination of JFK started at the highest levels of politics in Israel and trickled its way down into the American intelligence community and then was privately funded and planned with the help of the CIA by the organized crime groups in the mafia with the help of the American Zionist Council funneling that money. Again, I don't want this to seem like I'm trying to demonize the Jewish population. I'm not doing that at all. I'm specifically talking about the 1960s and just the state of organized crime and the mafia, the mob at this time. So this is the last thing I intend to do with this theory is to demonize the Jewish population, because I understand, like, right now it's a very sensitive topic in the world with the whole Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I am not taking any political side here. I just want to reiterate that for our listeners who don't know me. Again, just trying to stick to the facts of the assassination in the 1960s. So I'm also, you know, not to mention, I am pointing direct blame at the CIA and some of those in the higher ranks of American government, too. So, you know, there's evil everywhere in the world. It's not just one ethnicity, one race, one specific group, right? It spans everywhere. No one is perfect. That's just kind of the reality of the world we live in. It's just through the research of this series that these puzzle pieces are the ones that fit best to me. In fact, today the Jewish mafia, or also referred to as the kosher mafia, is actually a big part of American pop culture. Organized crime still exists, but it's not out in the public like it was during the time of Al Capone and Prohibition and, you know, the speakeasies and the flappers and all that whole 1920s, 1930s kind of mafia, old school kind of stuff isn't really out in the public anymore. We've really threw that into pop culture. A lot of movies, great films about organized crime in the United States. So again, this isn't an official story. This is just my take on the Kennedy assassination of what could possibly be a compelling truth. Just these connections between Israel's political interests, the CIA's political interests, along with, I mean, the vice president of the United States, LBJ's political interests, wanting to be the president, right? Like, this gets him right in the door, and if he just stays hush and lets it happen, he's there. So all of this just kind of, it makes sense to me. But again, I'm just giving you like this, I'm giving you this very broad view of the assassination. You'll have to do some of your own research and decide on your own theory, but for this sake, this is the theory that I came down to. So maybe one day we will find out the truth about John F. Kennedy's assassination. But for now, we just have to live with what we have and the reality that the world would look, I think, much different had an assassin's bullet never taken JFK's life. I truly believe that we would live in a much more peaceful world and have a lot less political issues that we are facing today. I think JFK was one of those leaders who he fought for the actual people and put his politics aside to try and work with everyone he could to make people's lives better. And not just in the United States, I'm saying all around the world. We saw what he did in Africa. We saw what he did in Latin America, what his efforts were. And in those 3 years, like, a president just can't get anything done. So I would love to go back in a time machine and live up to this day that we're living in now, but to see JFK absolutely finish out both terms and see what the world would look like. Guys, there you have it. 7 episodes of JFK assassination theories and information. Again, I've just thrown a tiny pebble into the ocean with this series. This was the first thing that hit my mind about bringing the podcast back. Is I was like, I'm going to do a JFK series. I'm going to research. I'm going to come up with a theory. I just want to revisit it. And there you have it. So I hope you enjoyed this series. I enjoyed doing it. It's been great to be back and being able to do the podcast again. Hopefully Audrey will join me again very soon. I just wrote another idioms episode, so we're going to be dropping that next week. So hopefully you guys come back next Friday for the History on the Rocks podcast, because we're going to get away from this JFK stuff. I'm going to stop freaking out about it and ranting about it to everyone and obsessing over it and drawing my maps. And we're going to talk about another list of 10 idioms and their history. It's a weekend and it's 70 degrees here where I live, and it's amazing. I'm very excited for a little warmer weather. There's going to be a dip in the weather here, a little cooler, but it's coming. I'm so excited for spring to be over and then finally summer. I hope it's nice where you are. I hope you're getting some drinks in this weekend, seeing some friends and family, and we will see you next week on the History on the Rocks podcast. Cheers!